Hello everyone and welcome back to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host Tony Black and this is another special episode before we get into season two because after quite a few months I've got another interview to do with the X-Files and comics beyond the X-Files. It's my absolute pleasure to invite on the show Denton J. Tipton. Hello sir.
Hi Tony, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is absolutely mine. Denton, you are a major player in IDW Publishing, who published the fantastic X-Files comics that we've been getting over recent years. And that's the primary reason I've asked you on, but we're going to have a chat about you and your career and all the other things that you've been involved in. So I just want to straight away thank you for taking time out and coming on the show.
Certainly. No, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to talk with you.
Thank you. To start off with then, let's talk about you then. You're, as I say, a major editor at IDW, and a lot of people will have heard your name before and read loads and loads of comics with your name on them. So can you tell us a little bit how you got started in your role and what exactly it is you do on a day-to-day basis with the comics?
Oh my goodness, that would be like a three-hour podcast if I told you everything that I did. It's quite expansive, and there's no telling what I will be doing from hour to hour, so it's always different, and it's a challenge. But my background, I went to school for journalism, and I worked in newspapers for about 8 years. And as that industry started to collapse, I started looking around for other jobs, and I found a Craigslist ad for a comic book editor. And I had actually been a comic book retailer when I was in college. That was one of the ways I put myself through school. And I'd read comics from a very young age. So I knew the industry as a retailer and as a fan. And I had a publishing background, so it turned out to be, you know, pretty much everything fell right into place for me to take that position. And they ended up hiring me. And 8 years later, here I am.
That's an amazing journey, though, coming through a Craigslist and finding it through there. That's really different.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very different company at that point. There were maybe a couple dozen employees at that point at the most, you know, not maybe about 5 years or so into it. And I actually met the one of the president of the company at the time, Ted Adams. He's the CEO now, and he's one of the co-founders. And I met him and Chris Ryle, the editor-in-chief, at a Starbucks. And, you know, we had like a little interview there, and it was pretty amazing what it's, you know, turned into. And recently you called me a major editor. I don't know if I'd call myself a major editor. I've been here for a long time and done a lot of books, and probably a lot that your fans have read, because I edited Doctor Who for a good while. And also Transformers, which has, you know, a strong UK fan base. So I got to meet a lot of folks from that side of the pond working on those books. But you know, day to day, telling you what I do, it's pretty incredible. I think I could probably tell you that, which might be boring, because it's like, hey, I go into this meeting and then I answer emails and then I do this, but maybe if I kind of talked about the way comics come together, that might be more interesting and have a you know, a bit of a linear through line there.
Well, I think it's something that a lot of people wonder about. I mean, I know, myself included. You know, you get these amazing comics every, you know, every couple of weeks or every month, and the amount that goes into them, and you see these names in the back, people sometimes forget the sheer detail and the complexity of it. And I sometimes see these names like yours and go, what is the process? How do you put all this together?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'll use X-Files as an example. That'll be a good case study for us. We the license was dormant for a while after Wildstorm had it. Mm. And we had established a relationship with Fox through doing the Angel comics, Joss Whedon's Angel. So they started shopping around the rights again, and they came to us, and we ended up signing a licensing deal. And then my boss, who I mentioned earlier, editor-in-chief, he's also now a chief creative officer, Chris Ryle, he went up to LA and met with Chris Carter and his head of production, Gabe Roeder, and they kind of talked about, some ideas, and they brought in Joe Harris. So Joe was actually attached to the project before I came along. And he had talked with Chris, and they all got along famously, and Joe kind of pitched him what he wanted to do. So this one was pretty different, because normally we're not pitching to the creator. Mm. And a lot of the times that all comes on the back end of things, like after the publishing deal is made. A lot of times that's secondary, but with this one, it was a bit different, and Chris was involved, and, luckily we passed, the sniff test, and and so from there, we secured the license, had our writer, then it came to me, and Chris handed it off for me to take it from there. And from there, I just started looking into different artists that I thought would fit the book. I started working with Joe on developing ideas on what the comic would be. And then so we worked up a proposal of what our major story arcs would be, and kind of some of the highlights of stories we want to hit, stuff we'd want to revisit. And Chris was really over the moon about it. And so that was easy. And the artist, actually, you think it's really difficult to find an artist, and it usually is, but I had been working with Matthew Dow Smith on the Doctor Who comics. Mm. And he's a massive Whovian, but he also loves drawing shadows. He would have the Doctor in shadows. He loved the trench coat that the Ninth Doctor had, and all that. So he you could see his noir, tendencies in his art coming out. So it just became a perfect marriage. I had him do some samples, and it was pretty evident he was the perfect guy for it. Perfect artist for it. And we were really lucky that Jordi Belair, who's Eisner award-winning colorist, was a huge X-File, and she had approached me about actually coloring it, and she was a big fan of Matt's art as well. So it kind of fell together really nicely. And from there, we'll take those proposals. We'll get notes from Chris, and we also send it to Fox, and they go through it. And Fox has been, really great partner. They've been basically letting us do kind of whatever we want, as long as Chris approves. And so they haven't been, they haven't caused any issues as far as content. And Chris has been, really happy with what Joe proposes, and, he'll steer us away from things that he wants to cover, in his own stories. And this was, well before the revival series came out. Mm. So once we got our proposal approved, Joe will write a script. His scripts are very detailed. He comes from the screenwriting school, so he's written and produced and movies, and he did some comics as well back in the 90s, and then he kind of came back working. I think one of his first books back was a couple creator-owned things, and then he did Firestorm for DC for the New 52. But he was deeply rooted in film. So his scripts are just very long, and very cinematic. So, those we do 20-page comics, and his scripts usually end up being closer to 45 pages. So they're pretty thick, and very good. And he captured the voices really quickly. And then once we get the script done, we get that off to Fox and Chris, my main point of contact day to day is Gabe Broder over at 1013 Productions. Mm. And he will send us any notes that Chris might have. And once we get that out of the way and get everything approved, we pass the script off to Matt. Matt will do what we call thumbnail layouts of each page. So they're just called thumbnails since they're smaller versions of the page, just to give like general direction, kind of close to like storyboards that you would see for movies.
Yeah.
Just to make sure nothing gets missed, or sometimes a panel can get missed, rarely, but sometimes there'll be a misinterpretation, or there'll be some happy accidents. But it's much easier to make corrections to the art at that stage than after they've been penciled and inked, which are the next two steps. And then once all those are all finished, the line art, pencils and inks, we hand them off to the colorist and the letterer. And the letterer I will make balloon placements for, so they know where each speech bubble goes and who it goes to. And all of that. And I also at that point do a copy edit of the script, make sure everything's on the up and up.
Yeah.
And those get lettered and colored at the same time. And then once all that's done, we merge that all together. We have production artists that, build the covers, do the designs. We also, do, the credits page. We have the next issue page. We do like a little story so far, so to catch people up or remind them where we're at in the story. Mm. We select ads for the book, for that audience. So all sorts of little things and that you don't really think of. And then we take all that and send it off to Fox and Chris for final approval. And a proofreader as well to give it a final look and make sure we didn't make any typos. And, no matter how many times you look at it or how many people it goes through, invariably there'll be some little typo that gets through. It's insane. I used to, as I said, work in newspapers, and, you'd have the reporter write the story, and then you would have their line editor edit with them, and then there would be a rewrite, and then it would go to the copy desk. The copy desk would copy edit it, and then it would go to the printed page and as a proof, and then you read the proof, and there's so many lines of defense, but something always manages to get through, and someone's always going to call you on it.
Yeah, inevitably. What's really interesting is that Chris Carter signs off on all of them. So he reads all of, basically, or him and the people around him read all of the comics before they get approved.
Yeah. Presumptively. I seriously doubt that he reads every word on every issue.
Yeah.
but someone in the office takes a look at it and makes sure, nothing slipped in there that shouldn't have or whatnot.
Mm.
And they're really easy to work with too. They have rarely have any changes for us. So it got a little different once the show came back on television, because Fox Studios was paying more attention to it at that point.
Yeah.
And Chris was a lot busier, as was Gabe. So it was much harder to get a hold of those guys at that point. But we still all managed to make it work and get all the books out on time and, tell some fun stories.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to ask about this because obviously before the revival series, Joe Harris had started season 10 and then season 11. Mm-hmm. Really great stories that although they were comic books, they were being considered by a lot of the fans as canon, following on from I Want to Believe. So it must have been a challenge when, inevitably, thanks to the revival series, the change was made to make the new run of comics, which we're getting now, fit with the established revival series canon. So was that particularly difficult, or was that a quite a fluid, you know, easy process?
Oh no, that was very, very difficult actually, because, you know, we definitely considered it canon, and we didn't contradict anything, and everything was signed off by Chris. But we always knew that if X-Files ever came back, you know, Chris wasn't going to be beholden to what we had done. Mm. You know, that would be ludicrous. During Comic-Con, after we had launched the series, I had breakfast, Chris Ryle and I had breakfast with Chris Carter and Gabe, and, you know, had a fantastic, you know, it's one of those pinch yourself moments, you know, you're like, am I actually having breakfast with the guy that, you know, created X-Files? It's just so surreal.
Yeah.
And we got along really, really well because we had similar backgrounds. He actually went to school for journalism as well. Mm. You know, had a lot of the same influences on our writing. We both wanted to be writers. Yeah. And, you know, it was really cool to, you know, be able to connect with him on that level. And he had mentioned during that breakfast that he had been wanting to do movies. He wanted to do more X-Files movies. So we're like, he was pushing for a third movie and trying to get that going with Fox. So we're like, you know, okay, well, if he has, you know, he might do a movie. And we, you know, had no idea that, you know, that would eventually morph into them bringing back the television show. You know, so we always, you know, had that hanging overhead that, you know, it might get wiped out. But, you know, it's still, you know, we told some really fun stories that were, you know, did some really, really interesting stuff. And Chris liked, you know, everything that we did, obviously, because he let us do it. But he kind of let us, you know, do our own thing. And then when the show, we find out about the TV show, we were just launching our season 11. Mm. So we had already, you know, solicited it and had done the first issue or two. So we were already committed there. So that ended up, we were planning, you know, a couple year run like we did on season 10 comic, but it didn't make sense to continue that. We wanted to, you know, catch up with the current stuff. So we wrapped up season 8 a little bit, season 11 early, and then did a relaunch that picked up with current continuity. So kind of ours went away, and the way, I don't want to give any spoilers, but the way we ended season 11, that it actually all could have happened anyway.
Okay.
But, you know, kind of a little hand waving, just considering the powers of the protagonist.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to spoil it because there's some interesting twists and turns in the story. You know, Joe came up with a way to make it fit that our seasons could have actually happened, and then it kind of got reset back to what they did with the revival, so they could still kind of coexist if you wanted to.
That's exciting. That's very exciting, because I suppose people would now think of it as almost like an alternate timeline, which was originally the main one. But it's exciting if they can dovetail into each other. So yeah, that will be really interesting to see happen there.
Yeah.
How did the new X-Files Origins project come about then? Because that obviously is it's just launched this week, and it's the, as we record, and it's the adventures of young Mulder and Scully when they're in their teenage years in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read it. I reviewed it. I really, really liked it. It was lovely. It was great. How did this project come about then?
Well, this is an interesting story. We had been wanting to, IDW had been wanting to do more all ages comics. You know, it's just, It just makes sense to do more of those, and we wanted to try to grow the a younger audience. And I had always wanted to do a digital first comic, so I was kind of marrying a few ideas that were floating around at IDW that we wanted to accomplish. And the artist on X-Files, Matthew Dell Smith, since I had worked with him on Doctor Who and then had been working with him on X-Files, I mean, we had worked pretty closely together for many years at that point. And we always had lots of conversations of what we'd like to do with comics. And one of them was, doing something that's digital first, that's formatted for digital readers. And we wanted to reach a younger, and so I kind of brought in that all ages to that concept to try to reach a younger audience through digital readers. So we kind of married that, and then I wanted to do more X-Files stuff, but there's only so much you can do. And I kept seeing, we kept doing, we have a more mature readers book, so it's kind of for the people that had, watched the show originally or come into it on Netflix or a little bit older. And a lot of the original fans had gotten older and started having kids, and they couldn't really share their fandom with their kids like, you could do if you're a superhero fan or what have you. So it just seemed like the perfect kind of conflagration, just a perfect storm of ideas to try to bring that to that fandom, let them be able to share it with the kids. We'd be able to reach a new audience and try to, push a newer medium through digital. So Matt and I had talked about that for a while, and then all those kind of elements started coming together. I'd worked with Jody Hauser on Orphan Black comics. And I wanted to bring her in on the project as well because we have female Scully, we have Mel Mulder, so I wanted to have female points of view as far as writing goes. And Matt had been, writing his own stuff for a good while. He'd done October Girl through Monkey Brain, and it was really well received comic, but he hasn't been able to draw it as much because he'd been drawing Doctor Who and X-Files to get put food on the table. So he would have much better time, easier time writing because it would take less time away from his art. So he could work that into the schedule much easier than a second book. And he hadn't been getting taken too seriously by other publishers as far as a writer. He's like, you're a comic artist, you can't write, kind of thing. Once you establish this one thing, it's really hard to shake a label. So pairing him and Jody up was kind of the best of both worlds. And Matt had come up with a skeleton of an idea and kind of had developed, and then we brought in Jody, and she helped develop it further. And then we decided, okay, it was like, okay, well, let's, get ready to start scripting these. And I was like, so Jody, I guess you want to do the Scully story, right? And she's like, no, actually, I kind of want to do the Mulder, And then I talked to Matt and simultaneously, and he actually really wanted to write the Scully story. So we kind of huddled together and come up with the overall plan, and then we ended up having the male write the female story, and vice versa.
That's really interesting.
With and they're both, and you've read the first couple of chapters of both. They do really well on their respective stories, and I couldn't really see them flipping. I couldn't really see Jody doing the Scully story, as it would be totally different. And So yeah, and then I had been working, as far as artists go, I'd been talking to Corin Howell for a while. She was in Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy ran a intern program for artists, and she was one of his interns for a while. And she was a huge X-Files fan. She was introduced to me by Joe Harris because she came up to him at his table at Comic-Con, and she was cosplaying as Scully. She's a redhead, so yeah. So like Joe sent her over to talk to me, and she was just this like a little ball of energy. It was amazing to see her in person because she was just bouncing around. It was pretty amazing. And she had started working at IDW a little bit on Transformers. And so she was already starting to work for us. So I had her do Scully samples, and they were great. We got that all approved. And then for Mulder, I had a colorist on Orphan Black, so Chris Finoglio, and he had worked with Jody as well. No way, he came on later. She did the first miniseries, so he worked on Orphan Black on the second miniseries, and he is also an artist, and he had more cartoony style, and most of the comics that I edit are more likeness driven, more needed realistic artist, so it's hard for me to find work for more cartoony style artists. But this is, kind of tailor made. We wanted to target, we're really trying to target like 8 to 12 year old, try to the juvenile, or not quite juvenile, but mid grade. So it really worked well because it almost looked like a cartoon, and he did fantastic samples. And so the team came together pretty quickly. I didn't really, need to try out a bunch of people to do pitches and samples. I kind of had a good idea on, who we wanted. So it came together really well. And we always do variant covers on our books. And I've been working with Kat Staggs on a few projects, including Orphan Black, and she does some amazing work. And she we'd had a concept of doing some homages to Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys. So she did covers that were reminiscent of that style, and they're just incredible.
They are really great. In terms of the bigger picture with IDW, just to talk about that briefly. Obviously, mm-hmm. you've worked in a lot of different verses overall, as you've mentioned quite a few of them, things like Doctor Who, Transformers, Orphan Black. I was curious if there was any particular fan verse that IDW are connected with or not that you would love to work in.
Wow, there's so many. I grew up a Star Wars fanatic, so that would be, really be a dream for me. I don't know how realistic that dream would be, considering, Marvel's owned by Disney, so, and Disney owns Star Wars now, so I don't know if that will ever happen, but, that was something that consumed my life from, probably 1981 through 1985, So I think that would be something I would love to personally. I've gotten to do a lot of really cool things that I've always wanted to do here. I mentioned earlier that I was a journalist. And the reason I got into that that profession was because a couple of my idols, Hunter S. Thompson and Ernest Hemingway. So those two of my literary heroes. And I actually got to work with the Thompson estate to do a adaptation of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Wow.
the artist, and he adapted and did all the art, Troy Little. And he did, we tried out so many people for that. And, you know, the only real guidance we received from the estate is they wanted to avoid Stedman-esque art, you know, just, you know, because they don't want, you know, a terrible carbon copy, which is, you know, exactly what they should be looking out for. And Troy just turned in some amazing samples. They're just so manic and expressive. And so that one was, that project was really huge and near and dear to my heart. So I've been very, very fortunate in what I've already been able to do.
Well, I was going to ask as well that you, you've written comic books yourself, haven't you? So as well as this, mm-hmm. like the Dorothy of Oz prequel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh my goodness, you did some deep Googling.
I did a bit of research. And I was going to ask, really, do you prefer the process, the editing process that you do on the majority of comics, or do you prefer writing? Have you got a favorite experience with that? It may well be the one you've just mentioned, but
I don't know. I love both. There's so much good about either, you know. Editing is a lot of hard work, and you don't get any of the credit. You get a lot of the blame, you know, but you get very little credit. You know, the credit rightfully goes to the creative team. Mm. So it's really rewarding to help someone else bring their vision to fruition. You know, it takes a lot of effort to get a comic made, and you know, like I said, there's a lot of pieces and it's I kind of liken it to a train, you know. Because you need to have an engine, you know, you need to have like the script that makes things go. You need someone that can build all the boxcars behind it, you know, so it can carry that, you know, that weight, that emotional heft of the story. And you need to have a colorist, you know, that comes in and then makes it, you know, makes it more real. And you know, it's really satisfying to you know, go through that process and see it come out. But it's also very satisfying to see your own vision, you know, come to life like that. So both are, you know, very rewarding. But at the end of the day, you know, editing, I don't have to do all the writing and coloring and drawing and all that, you know, all that hard work, you know, goes to the creative team. So you know, they get the praise, but they put in the hours for sure.
Yeah.
But I would say I would probably prefer writing, because, you know, it's something more personal. It's your own, you know, thing that you're trying to say, and getting that out and communicating with your audience in a direct way. You know, it's hard to beat that.
Well,
it's really hard to beat that.
You mentioned earlier as well that you were a comics retailer. So I'm assuming then you've been a fan of comics, obviously, since you were young. And what kind of things did you grow up reading? And what was it that inspired you?
Super Friends, watching the Super Friends cartoon got me into comics. And my dad worked with this guy that was into comics. And his son was about a year older than me. So I spent a lot of my formative years, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, you know, hanging out with my new friend and his dad's comic collection. So, you know, Batman from Super Friends really became my thing. So I really latched onto that, and that, you know, became my favorite character.
Batman's awesome in general.
Yeah. You know, he's not, you know, 80% of comic fans are going to say Batman's their favorite. It's pretty universal. It's just that wish fulfillment and him just being a normal guy doing these, you know, superheroic things and his code. Well, you know, we could go on and on. But yeah, so Batman was it for me. And, you know, so I continued reading comics from that age on into high school. And then I dropped off for a bit after seeing, you know, I was still there during the Big Image boom and Valiant and all that during the early 90s. And then once that kind of collapsed, I kind of fell out of comics like a lot of folks did, even though I've been a lifelong reader, you know, long before the boom. But, it, you know, I'd just gotten to the age where comics didn't really talk to me anymore. And then I started, I can't remember how I got into it, but I started reading some of the Vertigo comics.
Okay.
And then I'm like, oh, they're making comics for me, you know, because I was, you know, in college at that point. And so I really got back into comics in a big way and got into the indie scene. Mm. So I was, you know, really enjoying like Dean Haspiel, Ed Brubaker, and Brian Bendis, and all those guys, you know, before they became, you know, big famous names. They were, you know, doing really cool black and white indie comics, and those were the things I were really into back then.
You read them before they were cool.
Exactly, exactly. I had a really good guy that got me back into comics. His name's Ziggy McMillan in Knoxville, and he had this shop that was great, and he had, you know, impeccable taste, and he really turned me on a lot of stuff. And one of them is like, hey, here's this book called Low Life. I think you'd like it. And, you know, it's about some guy that works at a Xerox place and rides around on his motor scooter. And, you know, it's very, very indie, far removed from anything I ever, you know, liked reading in comics. But it was just something about it spoke to me, and it was engaging. And, you know, and that was Ed Brubaker's book that he actually drew it as well. So it was really weird to me, like when I was like, oh, Ed Brubaker's writing, you know, like Gotham Central, this new book. I'm like, oh, that's really weird. And I'm trying to think, like, before that, he had popped up. Oh, at Vertigo, he had done a Prez comic with Eric Schanauer. So he had done a couple little things. So I kind of followed him from his indie days and kind of saw him really blow up. So that was really, and, you know, obviously Bendis, when I started reading, I think it was AKA Goldfish was the comic. So yeah, I could tell you all kinds of boring, ancient comic book stuff, history that only comic book, nerds and comic employees from the mid 90s would know of.
I'm sure there's loads of them listening, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It is funny. It tends to happen to a lot of people where they go back around on comics, that they fall out of it when they get to, you know, their early, you know, out of their teens. And then it comes to a certain age and you kind of rediscover them again. I know I've certainly found that as I've got into my mid 30s. So it does have a certain cyclical nature to it, really. I think people discovering, that's why the X-Files Origins project is so good, because people, you know, young kids being able to discover this at such a young age, and these kind of comics, and discover an entire, you know, fandom and everything is brilliant. And it's a great way of getting people hooked in and hopefully staying there, really.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the team has done a really great job on it. You know, it's really well written, and, you know, it has, the stories have emotional weight, and the characters are spot on, and, you know, there's interesting storylines and twists. So, you know, it's good, you know, it's good reading for adults, you know, you know, children. So I'm really, really happy with the way it's come out, and it sounds like, and I'm really great to hear your reaction to it. I hope, you know, a lot of other folks are enjoying it as well.
From what I've seen on social media, they are. It's gone down really well, which is great. So I'm sure that'll continue. Well, before I wrap this up, I've got one last question, Denton, to ask you. And I do ask everyone this who comes on the podcast. And it does go back to the X-Files. And it's a simple question. And it's simply this. Do you believe in the paranormal?
Yes.
Cool. A lot of people say no. That's really good. Why do you believe? Why do you believe in the paranormal?
Just experiences. I've had experiences. You know, nothing too outlandish, but stuff that, you know, there's no rational or scientific explanation for. And you know, we're discovering more and more about, you know, the universe around us every day. You know, science isn't exact. You know, it's always being updated, and we're learning new things. And I think to discount that is very short-sighted.
Wise words. And it's nice. It's nice to hear someone say yes. That is really good. Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up there then. I've kept you more than long enough. So it's been a real joy to chat to you, Denton, and hear the process of making not just X-Files comics, but comics in general from the position you have. And I know I can speak on behalf of many in the X-Files fan community that we love what you guys are doing, and we long may it continue.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And we enjoy the feedback. You know, we love engaging with the fans, and the more we can do that, you know, the better comics we can make. So hopefully we can continue that in the future.
Definitely. Absolutely. Well, before we go, is there anywhere people can find out more about you, or find out more about what you're doing, or IDW, or is there anywhere you want to signpost people to?
You can, just look me up on Facebook or Twitter. Pretty easy to find. I'm at Denton Tipton on Twitter. I think it's Denton.Tipton on Facebook, but, you know, a Google search obviously can find out many dark secrets about me, like my Dorothy of Oz comic. Great. Well, thank you very much for having me, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the books.
Oh, no, the pleasure is mine. I really, really appreciate your time. So, that's it for now, guys. We'll be back soon with another interview, hopefully, and certainly more exploration of season 2 of the X-Files, which is coming up very, very soon. So until then, remember the immortal words: trust no one.